You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 291. This week, we talk about Bitch Planet, Extraordinary Machine. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
So, David.
Yes.
I bought that Kraven off of eBay that you pressured me into buying, and it came today in the mail. And my God, his face is beautiful. I have no regrets here at all.
Good. I'm glad my peer pressure worked on you in a positive way.
So I will be taking some pictures, and I'll send them to you. The jacket on him is supposed to be removable, so he can just go, like, topless. But it's super hard plastic, so I don't know if you can actually be able to get it off. Is it two pieces? No, it's just one. So I think you have to break it in order to get it off.
Oh. You should send pictures to the both of us. I want to see this.
Oh, I'll post them on Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want you to know that you said you bought a Kraven, and I was excited enough that I spilled coffee on myself. I was like, that's awesome.
Oh, man. The articulation on him really sucks, though, because of the jacket. All right. Do you guys want to talk about this week's comic?
Well, I would like to talk about one thing first. Sunday, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Ooh, yeah, I saw it, too. We got a babysitter and went and watched it.
Oh, nice. What did you think?
I think it was fucking great.
I think it was awesome also.
Good.
Yeah. Did you like more or less than first film?
So that's what I was going to say. I think I like this one better.
Ooh.
But the first one definitely had a better soundtrack.
Yes.
This one has a good soundtrack. Like, all the songs are good songs. But I don't think they, like, fit into the... They don't fit with what's going on in the movie as well as the songs that did in the first one.
See, for me, I feel like that was the one thing that stood out to me about this movie. The first movie, the music was really good, and it was an important part of the story, but it felt natural. But in this one, I feel like they mentioned so many times that music is super important to Quill and super important, and the music and the soundtrack, like... Music played an important part, just, I don't think, more important of a part than the first movie, but they pointed it out way more often, and it started to feel awkward, it started to feel forced, even though it didn't have to.
I can see that.
That's like the only gripe I had with that movie. Otherwise, Ego was perfect. Ego was fantastic as a villain.
Yeah.
I loved it. Oh my God, and Yondu. Yondu's so good.
Oh my God, Michael Rooker, like, stole the show.
Yeah.
He was so good as Yondu.
Oh, when they're escaping that ship, and they're just falling down all around him as they walk through the catwalk. It's this beautiful scene, but it's so, like, so goddamn violent. It's beautiful and wonderful. There were, like, so many kids in the theater when I went and watched it, and I was like, there's literally 100 people dying on screen right now.
Yeah, I mean...
It's not like... Deadpool Netflix show violence, but there's a lot of dead people.
There's not like blood and gore and stuff, but yeah, lots of people died.
Yeah. Yeah, and not fun ways, but it's a really good movie. I'm happy they're gonna do a third one.
That's awesome. Because my favorite Marvel movie is the first one.
Yeah, this one it definitely lives up to the first one, if nothing else. I think I liked it better in some ways. What's cool about this one is you didn't have to spend time, like, waiting for the team to come together. So they kind of, like, just jumped right into the story, and I think this one has more feels. I think it's a little bit heavier emotionally,
but it makes
sense. Like, it all makes sense. I think James Gunn did a great job not only directing it, but also writing it, because it's a very, very cohesive story. And it doesn't feel like there's much wasted screen time.
Yeah, and you're dead on about you're dead on too about not having to explain the characters, and just they just hit the ground going. You don't, and none of them really need a whole lot of explanation to begin with, because they're all kind of hyperbolic characters, or all kind of characters. But because you didn't have to, you can milk that extra 15 minutes of the movie for good character moments. Like Drax was comic relief, but also got really, really good character development after being comic relief. Drax was like one of my favorite characters, so much to the point that after the movie, part of the reason I have Kraven is because I also bought a Drax action figure with a similarly ridiculous face, and I want to have them sitting at the dinner table together shouting at each other.
What I like about Dave Bautista as Drax is you can tell that he really is enjoying himself playing that character. Like it's a great cast in a great movie. Definitely go see it if you can, Jen, in the theater.
Okay. Duly noted.
Okay.
I feel like I laughed out loud more in this one.
I like that.
Maybe I'm just not remembering correct, but I laughed a lot.
That's a good sign for me, because I've noticed my tastes have changed over the however many years Marvel's been putting out movies, where the ones that are genuinely funny are the ones that I really like. Cause, the Avengers movies tend to follow this kind of set plot and script formula where it's action, action, joke, dialogue.
Yeah.
And those never get a laugh out of me anymore. But the first one, I adored that film. I haven't rewatched it a second time, though, and Grant said it wasn't as good second time around, but I don't believe that.
I totally agree with where you're coming from. I feel the same. I feel like Ant-Man is up there near the top of my favorite Marvel movies, and it's just funny. I think Paul Rudd is great in that movie.
I have three. I have not seen Thor 2, Ant-Man, or Logan.
Logan is...
It doesn't really... it's part of the X-Men thing, I know.
But. Right, but I mean, Logan is an excellent movie. I saw it twice in the theater. But it is not... it's definitely a movie that's going to hit you in the feels real hard.
Okay.
When I watched it the second time, there was a teenage girl, probably 13 or 14, and she was crying at the end of Logan. Aww. And her mom was like, of all the movies to cry at, you're crying at the superhero movie? And she was like, but it was sad.
That girl cried at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, too.
Did she? Wait, are you making a joke?
No, I bet you she would have. I'm just saying it's also a move that surprisingly will hit you in the feels a couple times.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it has a lot of emotion. But Logan, even more so. I don't think they could have sent Hugh Jackman off any better than they did with Logan.
Hmm.
Okay. Have you seen it, Andy?
No, I'm going to watch that one on Netflix.
It's really good. I mean...
We don't have family that we can leave the baby with here. So for us, to go out and see a movie, the tickets to Guardians of the Galaxy cost $20 between the two of us, but the babysitting cost $80. So,
oh yeah,
I really want to see a movie.
I got you, but it's definitely rated R, and it's like that because they don't hold back on the violence.
Hmm.
But it's supposed to. I don't know. It doesn't feel like a grim, dark superhero movie, even though it kind of is. But it makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
I get.
It doesn't
I get
feel
the vibe
forced.
You're conveying.
It doesn't. It's not grim, dark for the sake of being grim, dark. It's just that that's the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of like not the third Batman movie.
Right. Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
So I've tried to pose Craven, so it looks like he's pulling his jacket open to reveal his sweet six-pack, but instead it just looks like he's playing with his nipples.
That's even better.
All right. You guys ready to start this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's fine. No, it's good. It's good.
This week's comic.
This week we're at Bitch Planet, Extraordinary Machine, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Valentin Delandro. And this is the last of our Turns Out It Was Good series. These are comics that we didn't read for whatever reason when it was a best of from a previous year. I think this one was from 2014 when it first showed up on the best of lists. And we didn't read it then, but we're coming back for it now. And I'm so happy we did. This is like horrifying and entertaining all at the same time. And oh, man, this was a nerve ride to read.
Like, right off the bat, my favorite part of this were the fake ads at the end of each issue.
Yeah, they're great.
Those were so brilliant.
Definitely. So let me ask, did you guys read the physical copies of the comic, or like an ebook collection, or?
Oh yeah, I have the trade paperback.
The physical trade paperback.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, so at the end of the trade, there's like, at least on the Comixology version, there's like a discussion guide.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it mentions essays. And I thought, I don't remember seeing any essays. But then I read issue 6 because it was also on Comixology Unlimited. And that, at the end, has a bunch of essays.
Hmm.
I didn't get to read any of them yet. But I feel, I imagine there must be some in the individual issues. And I kind of want to find them and read them.
So the question you're referring to, it says, this book builds a culture around itself through the retro art, stylized promotions, essays, and sale of back page garbage, and an active online community. How does this affect the way you read and think about the book? I mean, like, I love these questions because these are excellent questions. Like, we could do a podcast just answering these. I think we'll get around to some of these kind of as it goes. But yeah, man, it's all like, and the question itself does a really good job of building it up. Like the essays and that, I haven't seen those, but it's dead on about how it builds a mystique through not only the language it uses, but the imagery and the little subtle things. Not just how like when there's two news anchors and it's a man and a woman, they're bouncing back and forth and man says sweetheart. But even the stuff like the first shower scene where it says obligatory shower scene. Like there are not a lot of omniscient third person notes, but when they show up, they're just kind of a little bit there. And it's like, mm-hmm. It does a good job of building that tone that reminds you of like a crappy 70s exploitation movie. Kind of, I think the same way, the Grindhouse movies that Tarantino did? Those two, yeah. Just build, mm-hmm. build such a vibe. And this reminds me of those, and those remind me of this, now too. But yeah, it builds that whole thing around it, and then also sets it in a sci-fi kind of genre. Because of course, right? If it's 70s, if it's 70s and you don't make the sci-fi, it's gonna hit too close to home. So you have to make it sci-fi to have a little bit of removal from what the reality is. But this isn't that fictional. And this came out in 2014, and we don't want to get too political on the show too much, but I feel like this is really relevant now. Because what does it say on the last one? That you see little hints in the background of protesters saying Eleanor lives, and they're painted as terrorists, and the last page to the last issue says Eleanor for America, and it says President Bitch written over it. So you get the feeling that and it's in front of the Stars and Stripes and everything. So you really, really get the feeling that this backlash that's happened to create this world that of Bitch Planet happened after that, or because of something that happened with that. Like, I don't know what happened there, but that was definitely a flashpoint in the world of this comic. which makes it really, really interesting to recontextually in 2017.
What's kind of funny for me is, like, you know, the idea of an exploitation film is, well, let me preface that by saying, like, exploitation goes, like, really, really deep as a genre, and there's no way we could cover it. But, like, the very basic idea, if you ignore, like, all the cult following and, like, rebellion involved, is there is a popular topic at the time. Let's make a movie about it to make money. And I'm like, is this a tongue-in-cheek exploitation of the fact that grassroots third-wave intersectional feminism is, like, very much in vogue right now? Because it is. It's very popular as the feminist mindset. This kind of, like, very radicalized third-wave internet-propelled feminism is very much, I feel, like, replacing, like, the second wave 1970s feminism of, like, equal pay. There's, like, do you guys know, like, the Scum Manifesto?
Oh, God. I subscribe to a podcast called Stuff Mom Never Told You, and I recommend it to everybody who's read this comic and is listening, and they did an episode on I forgot all of it.
Okay, I mean, just to sum it up, like, the Scum Manifesto is, like, the most radicalized idea, which is, like, all men should be killed. and it's more nuanced than that, but it is crazy. And I feel like that kind of thinking ties, like, really deeply into this comic as, like, the polar opposite, right? Because the ideas, like, that radical idea of, like, all men are trash, just murder them. You can, like, bring that back into this, and you see the kind of, like, worldview in this comic portrayed that would promote really radicalized feminist thinking on the other side of the issue, right? Because, like, Andy, you said, you know, what we're seeing on Bitch Planet is, like, close to what we have today. But, I mean, the reality is that it's really on the nose in that it does portray some huge issues that women and women of color and queer women face. But no, like, at the same time, there are people who think, like, this is the literal world we live in. Which, you know, we don't quite have Bitch Planet yet. Although I am absolute, Grant and I kept joking, like, Jen's going to get sent to Bitch Planet.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think what this comic functionally does is all of the things that feminism today identifies as being causes that women can't get ahead, all of the things that routinely put women down that are ingrained in the tapestry of our culture, this comic takes those things and actually makes the fight against them criminal. So, a good example in here, I think there was some ad about, or somebody was talking about, after you have a kid, you got to get right back to that pre-body shape, or your husband's going to leave you. And in this one, it's implied, like, if you don't work your ass off to get to that pre-baby shape, you are going to go to Bitch Planet. Like, your value is based upon how you look, to the point that if you do not believe that is important, then you are non-compliant and get sent to Bitch Planet. And there's, I mean, the cultural piece in American society is, like, your husband will cheat on you, leave you. There's all this social fear around not losing that weight after you give birth. And this just makes it stark black and white. Like, this takes those things and makes it, okay, let's all the way. Instead of making it a societal norm and violating a societal norm, we're going to make it violating a law. And there are direct consequences for violating that law and what happens to these women when they get sent there. And it's interesting because the counterculture against it in this comic is also dialed up to the extreme. Like, these women are now trying to enact the Scum Manifesto. They want to blow up that ship with all the men on it.
And I realize, like, just so I don't get listener ire, I missed a very crucial point about the Scum Manifesto, is that it is satire, like the kill all men thing, but there are also people who are like, no, it's 100% legitimate viewpoint, so I've met them. Anyway, yeah, and I mean, like, it's actually, I think one of the best scenes in this comic comes really early, where we see the Mr. Collins, and he's, like, begging for his wife. And it turns out to be the younger, hotter wife who was accidentally taken away instead of the quote-unquote non-compliant wife. And, I mean, it's not just compliance to the laws. It's compliance to a viewpoint that someone within, like, a patriarchal power norm is seeing you as conforming to those laws, too.
Yes.
So, like, there's another layer to it. Like, Penny, right? Like, they're like, how do you see your ideal self? And it sounds like they weren't going to send her to Bitch Planet if it was, like, this, like, hot bod, pale-skinned, very, like, Western idealized beauty standard girl that she saw in that mirror, mm-hmm. but she saw who she was, and they're like, no, fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I thought that scene was really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, like, I didn't really know which way it was going to go, but I was happy for Penny that was how she viewed herself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I felt the exact same way.
Yeah. When they were building up to it, I was hoping it was either going to go the way it went or I was thinking, oh, it's going to be a male version of herself that's going to be in that mirror. Because what Penny wants in this world is the power to have her own agency. And that's what she's been wanting this entire time. And that's what she wanted, like, with her muffin shop, right? Like, she just wants to have her shop and live her life and for people to leave her the fuck alone and be okay with her. And I think, in the context of this comic, the only way that's ever going to happen is if she was a man. So I was thinking maybe we would see that, but that gets into a lot of, you don't want to go that way when you're trying to make the statements that Kelly Sue's trying to make. And you want her to be happy with who she is in her body as a person. And you want the idealization to be that she's happy and not that she is subjected to all this. Like that, yeah, that of course, makes perfect sense.
It's actually kind of like a neat scene of revelation for her, too, because she's like yelling no. She doesn't want to look in the mirror first because she's so afraid of what she's going to see.
Uh-huh.
She's afraid that it's going to be, like, that embedded idea that they want her to see. And she starts, like, laughing when she sees herself. And I just really love that, where she's like, nope, they haven't gotten me.
I love that one, because earlier on, when the men are talking, one of them, like, uses the wrong word. Oh, yeah. We're basically able to take readings of various electrical impulses in your body, and through a complicated series of algorithms, yeah. Frank, through a complicated series of those, like, it's those little things like that. Little, just offhanded things that are peppered all throughout this, like, that guy is not there because he is competent at all. That guy is there because he is a guy and because he has shaken the right hands. And you get that all the way down to Father Josephson, who I think is also one of my favorite characters in this comic. Not because I like him, but because he is such a perfect, beautiful encapsulation of the kind of character that I don't see portrayed as a caricature like this. It's the uncle who smacks the waitress on the ass. Like, that is Father Josephson. And a lot of people have that uncle or have that grandfather or whatever. And in a world where that person is in power and there's no repercussions for any of those things, this is the kind of person you get. And I love that we get not just the extreme and the caricatures and the real characters, for the women on Bitch Planet, but, like, we get the extreme caricature, but still realistic and believable trail of somebody like Father Josephson, who is just, oh, so despicable in so many nuanced ways.
Yeah, well, I think, gross. Go on.
I was going to say, I was thinking about what you said, how, you know, if these kinds of things are you know, this attitude is promoted, you end up with people like Father Josephson. That's probably why he's like the leader, right?
Yeah.
Because he is now in this society of Bitch Planet. He's like the ideal man, right? He's mm-hmm. a man's man. And so that's why he's so prominent in this this world, right? Yeah.
And I love that it's also not just on the intersection of gender and sex, but it's also on the intersection of culture and ethnicity and the way he treats what was the doctor's name? It was in the last issue and I was trying to hurry at the end of my lunch break, but oh god, what was the guy's name? Dr. Mako? Makoto.
Oh, yeah, Makoto Maki.
Yeah, Makoto Maki, yeah. The way when Makoto first walks in, this is Dr. Maki, who has, by all accounts from what the story is telling us, a genius and amazing at what he does. The introduction is Father Joseph is doing kung fu at him because he's Asian. Like, my God. It's horrible. But it is exactly what that character would do.
It's, I actually really like Maki because, you know, you get to it and you're like, okay, this is very caricatured. I need real characters at this point. And then you get Maki and he's obviously like a man who is also a human. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that like in terms of this comic is implying not that so much as he's a characterized, like fleshed out person in this. But then we see the dynamic between him and his wife. And then you see like, oh, those roles are still there. It's just she's taken on the quote unquote male role, right? She's domineering, but not in like the bitchy way. She's like, I won't let you ruin everything we've built.
Uh-huh.
Like kind of this implication that she's the one concerned with legacy, maybe with industry or business, because they do have this huge company, right? And he's family oriented. Because he wants to put himself at risk in order to see his daughter.
Ah.
So, did you catch that Mako, the girl who got her neck snapped at the end, was his daughter? Yeah. So, I mean, like, it actually took me like a moment to piece that together, even though they very obviously have the same last name, which was weird. But He's characterized more as, like, I think what this comic would say is supposed to be female in this society. So I thought that was kind of an interesting twist, too. And then he's the only male character that we see who's, like, decent dude, maybe.
You guys got to read issue 6. Sorry.
Oh, no, I will. All right. I'm subscribed to the trade. I just need to wait for the trade to come out.
You get more on their family in issue 6.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, because there's also another daughter in that picture.
Well, so this is not a spoiler, but issue 6 is a flashback, and it explains why Mako is in...
Is on Bitch Planet.
On Bitch Planet, yeah.
Ah.
Ooh. Okay.
All right.
And you get some more racism and stuff in there, too.
Yeah, racism. No, and I mean, the end of the book crushed me, because you're right, we finally do get that complex character, and he's going to risk what his family has, and he's going to go all the way out there and risk his life in the process, and do something to support a regime that he despises, by all accounts, and to see his daughter who is dead. Like, man, this was a good comic making good commentary, and it was entertaining to read, and I love the sci-fi bent, and I was going along just fine, and I did not expect that little punch at the end like that. I was like, oh god, Kelly Sue, what are you doing?
No, yeah, my that's favorite. Killing Mako at the end is what got me into the comic. I was kind of iffy on it, honestly, until then, and I was like, okay, I'm engaged now. She was kind of one of the more interesting characters that we see. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, she's a driving force kind of behind the main character whose name is just escaping me right now.
Yeah, me too.
Did it start with a K?
I think it's a comma. They call Cam. Her Cam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she, I don't think that's like what she likes to be called. I think that's just what they refer to her as.
Okay. I need to flip back through and look it up, but
like, Kamau Kogo.
She's Kamau Kogo. Okay.
Kamau, yeah.
So Mako's one of the people who really pushes Kamau into forming the Megaton team in the first place. And I'm like, okay, she's interesting. She's doing something, and suddenly she's dead. So I want to find out more now about, like, I don't know, just the results of that, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason they put this team together was to get that woman on the ship. And now she's gone. And now you can't back out. You can't. And so I think it does come back to, Cam says to the special operative, special agent, I don't know what, I call her Georgia in my head, but I know that's not her name. Cause the setting was Georgia,
when
she first came in with the sweet tea. Which I also love cause Southern gentility and all that kind of stuff is just so rooted in masculinity and all of the stuff in this comic that it's the perfect setting to call up. But, like, when she says, I see you, I see what you're doing, like, she realizes what the game is. The game is to give all of the men back home the satisfaction of seeing these women get it and get it handed to them. So it's there for the sick fucks. It's there to reinforce the message that if you're non-compliant, you are one of these women. And I think that they played right into what they wanted by putting, like, Penny on the team, putting some of these more extreme characters on the team versus just, like, a group of women who would want to maybe reintegrate. These women don't want to reintegrate. They want no part of becoming compliant again. They have nothing to do with that. Cam was manipulated to that position perfectly. And it's rough.
Yeah. I'm flipping through and, like, I've noticed too, for some of these people, it's like the reason they're on Bitch Planet is just nuts.
Yeah.
Right? Like, one of them is the twins, and it says unpermitted birth, genetic error. And it's so you got sent to prison because your mom, like, and dad accidentally had extra child.
Well, I think it even says that they were given up by the parents.
Yeah, but that's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, man. Yeah, but I mean, it's all of the reasons why women and girls are pushed out of functional society, right? I mean, I think that happens a little bit less, especially where we are in America and the West Coast. But, like, thinking of other countries where being born a woman immediately means, like, you are not going to participate in this culture. You are just not. Or even if you are going to participate, you're going to be put so far behind that it functionally does not matter. And I don't mean that in a way, like, in America, if you are a woman, you can get a job, you can do all these things, and you will definitely be behind, quite a bit, but you can make a life for yourself. But there are a lot of countries out there, and I think the twins are drawn in a way to evoke those areas of the world where you don't even bother.
Well, they do have Chinese last names and one birth policy. A lot of girls are literally thrown out.
Yeah.
Although that is reversing now. Mostly, I think.
By necessity?
Well, necessity, because there's no women for the guys to marry. And China is feeling pressure from the outside world, being like, what you do in China. And just the general sense of, like, they actually have better economic prosperity now, so there's not such a need for
the one child.
For strict regulation of birthing, so...
Yeah, but I mean, even moving west from there, like in India, there's a huge discrimination against women in the culture. And then you move west from there to the Middle East, and it's just like, yeah, this is the criminalization of something that happens socially and is actually criminalized around the world. And I think by putting it in the sci-fi section, in the sci-fi genre, Kelly Sue DeConnick is artificially creating a reason for all of these problems that exist in the world today to come to one place. And I know, like, Bitch Planet is portrayed as being a whole planet, but all of these intersections are showing up right away in this. There's no traveling on the world. There's no unnecessary evaluation of the context, per se. I mean, we're bringing stuff to this text. But as you're reading it, all these women are here together right next to each other. I mean, you don't need extra context. And the sci-fi setting on this just peels all that away and just shows you exactly what, like, there's no borders here. It's just women being fucked.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. That's actually, like, what I don't like about the comic. I think that intersectional feminism is deeply on trend right now. And I do think that, yes, obviously, it's a given statement. Intersectional feminism is almost a tautology. Yes, there are factors that involve not just your gender, but also your race, your ethnicity, your socioeconomic class, your sexual orientation, and these all affect your station in life. At the same time, I think that intersectionalism tends to oversimplify a lot of issues, and it turns things into a degree of oppression Olympics where we start assigning values of oppression based on the way people look, whether or not they are gay or straight or queer or whatever, whether or not
kind of the I am the intersection of all cultures. Of the most put upon.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there are people at a huge disadvantage, but and you talk about Western feminism versus I think it's really important here to specify, yes, you can start at China and start going west. And, I mean, India has problems. China has problems. The Middle East has problems. Like, everywhere has some degree of problems. But in the, like, Europeanized, colonized West, those problems are of a much different degree. And if you really look at data, more than anything, like, socioeconomics is a factor. If you are born mega rich and you are black, yes, people will still treat you poorly, and that is incredibly shitty, and that is a problem America has been grappling with. And I do not mean to discount things that happen to people that legitimately happen and are terrible. But at the same time, intersectional feminism is kind of setting up a system of thought, like this, like, postmodernist, post-structuralist set of ideas in which, like, words are violence, and the way that you see people is a kind of violence. And there's a huge difference in my mind as someone who is privileged enough to be able to, like, live comfortably as a person of color and as a woman. That, like, assigning race and violence and oppression, like, in these categorized forms starts becoming harmful. And if you look at intersectionality, like, for instance, it tends to chuck Asian people out the door because they don't know what to do with that. Asian people thrive in America as a general statistic, obviously not everyone. So my problem with this comic, bringing this back, I don't mean this to just be like Jen rants about feminism. Yeah. No one needs to listen to that. This comic, it does do like a satirical take on these things. But at the same time, I think it is showing an extreme that, yeah, it exists for some people, but no, the world is not. We're not approaching Bitch Planet, and we have to take it with a grain of salt that it is satire on patriarchal values. It is satire on these intersections that get people deeply in trouble for things that they never did. So yeah, Bitch Planet does bring it all together, but for me, it's very much like on the nose. I keep using that phrase because I can't find the other words I want to describe it, but there's a very strong sense of like, these are the problems that women face. These are the problems that women of color face and queer women, like gender non-conforming is a term that you see here. And yes, people do face those problems, absolutely. But at the same time, like, you have to not take what is satire. You have to take it with a grain of salt. And I feel like this is a bit hit you over the head. I will say, too, I've read Volume 2 of Odyssey the same day I read Volume 1 of Bitch Planet, and I think that is something that explores gender and plays with gender roles, especially Volume 2, with a lot more... It's a different touch, obviously. Like, it's not satire. It's very nuanced. It's very subliminal. But having those two things in direct comparison, I don't want to be slapped in the face with intersectional feminist values. And that's actually what made this comic like not as good for me. Because I feel like it is not a... I like seeing things and then being able to think about them, not being told, consider this thing because this is the way things are, and I feel like that's what this comic is doing. That is my problem. Finally.
And I think there's times when this comic handles its main topic well and times when it does it not as well. And I think what you're talking about, I think it comes up mostly when we see the prisoners themselves and the interactions between them and the possible reasons why they're gone. I don't think it's a mistake that the special operative agent woman is blonde and southern, and I think that's not a mistake at all, and that the protagonist is a black woman with the big hair. That said, I think that this comic shines best when it is taking the sort of subtle sexism that happens in our culture and just ramps it up to the ridiculous degree that makes it beautiful satire. Like in the beginning, I think it's the beginning of the second issue where they're having the party talking about, I don't remember what it is, but there's a party and it's all the bigwigs are there talking, and all of the servers are women in like bunny suits, like bunny outfits from Playboy era. And all of the people at the function are men. And it's never pointed out. It's not in your face, except for the fact that the women doing the serving are, it's a yellow uniform too. Other than that color and art distinction, it's just considered to be a fact of life. And it's one of those things that if you were just reading the words and going panel to panel, looking at the movement of characters, you're not gonna notice if it wasn't in this context. But when you're reading, you're like, huh. All men. because in this context, you're paying way more attention to those kinds of things. And I think this comic, its strength is that, because then you turn away from that and you read the news or you look at historical pictures or whatever. Like, you can then carry that eye that this comic trains you to have in those situations to the real world. And that's when it works really well. Because the best function of satire is to show you reality to the extreme so that you can recognize it better in your daily life. And this, I think, then is great satire because it's taking what it purports to be the situation of the world and ramping it up to the extreme, making a joke of it or making it a caricature. And then when you put the book down and look around, you're much more cognizant of that. And I think you're right about it being over the top in some instances, but in other instances, when it does it best, it's when it's subtle like that. And it just takes these things for granted and moves forward as if the world is already fucked and we're just gonna act like it, because none of the characters in this book would point it out, except for the women on Bitch Planet who know it's fucked up. They will point it out to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just gonna end up having to agree to disagree on that one. Yeah. So.
Okay. David, you've been quiet. What do you think of this?
I'm listening to you guys. You guys are having a good conversation.
Usually when feminism comes up, I kind of like lean back and go, okay, I'm a straight white man. Go ahead.
I'm in the same position as you. I mean, like, I recognize the problems that women face on a daily basis in our society, and I wholeheartedly agree that those kinds of things need to go away. Especially, you know, being raised by a single mother, it's so interesting. Like, my mom and I don't have the same job, and we did different jobs in different industries, but I remember when, like, thinking about how much money she made, right before she retired. And, it's weird that I'm, like, the age that I am, and I make as much as she did when she retired. It didn't occur to me until recently when my mom was getting ready to retire that, it's so interesting that, it's sad. My mom worked really hard and, she made a good salary, but I don't know, maybe a combination of when she was working and also being a woman in the high tech industry. I mean, that could have had a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. And, especially, having a daughter also, like, she's 3 right now, so I don't, this doesn't come into my mind too often, but, I know that as she gets older, there are things that I'm going to worry about. And, I think that's really unfortunate because I probably won't have the same worries with my son.
Yeah. No, I feel like I have never been more pissed off in my life than when I had a daughter. Not because I had her, but because of the way it makes me view the world. And I know I can say that, as a straight white man, like, I had so much privilege and I knew I had it, but I didn't have it through that close of a lens. And now I'm so much more angry because this is the world my daughter gets. And I think that's why Makoto is such an interesting character. And that's what ties me to him in this book, because it's somebody in this book that after 3 issues, 4 issues of caricature and over the topness, we get Makoto and I'm like, that is fucking me, right? Like, my wife is not that woman, but I will do that for my daughter. I will be pissed that happened to her. And my take, Jen, you said that the wife was the reversal of the gender roles, and that she's talking about the building of the company and the legacy of that. And I didn't pick up on that. And I was looking at those pages, and when she's saying those words, the logo for the company is behind her. So I think it's very clear that that's what they're trying to do. Because she's standing in front of the logo for the company. So I think it is clear after you pointed it out. I totally agree with you. But when I was reading it, my thought was like, oh my God, are they forming a resistance? Like risking exposure to what they're trying to do? Because this also came right after the Eleanor terrorist woman, Eleanor Lives terrorist in the background of some stuff. So I was thinking maybe at the end of the episode at the end of the issue, they were building that up. So I thought that might have been the track it was going. So that's why I was like, yes, my guy is here. Somebody I can finally connect to. But yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. And I have not read issue 6. Maybe there is more to Yumi Maki than meets the eye. But yeah. And I just want to clarify, I am a feminist. I am not against feminism. I am a feminist. Like, I just...
I don't know anybody who isn't a feminist. They just don't like the word and what it means.
Sometimes you meet them. They're scary people. It's radicalized anything, really, that usually gets my goat. And I see, yeah, so, don't get me wrong, like, as a woman who is clearly ethnic and recognized as such in almost every daily interaction, life gets interesting, you know? But at the same time, I think it's good to keep calm and look at the world and, no, don't carry on.
Thank you. I was like, you're not going for that meme, are you?
Get sent to bitch planet, for reals.
Are you kidding? That's the most conformist line I could have said.
Obviously, there needs to be change. And I just I don't think that the change advocated, like, the reactionary change, the crazy fear is the right way to go.
Yeah.
And I feel like, this comic is like the sum. It's like a just balled up bunch of female fears that I think we've all had as women. Like, just put in one, and I totally get it. I get that, but, I don't, and it could just be like the B moviness of the whole thing. Although I do tend to like B movies. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it, here's the thing. I feel like it's really, really fucking hard to talk about these things because I think that we have ended up in a kind of cultural mode in which, talking about others and their situations is so insanely polarized that it becomes hashtags, right? It's like, not all men, not all black women, blah, right? But, like, yeah, it's important to tell stories. It's important to tell stories that point out the problems that people face. Like, I think that Penny's story in this comic is the best story. I loved that issue. It was my favorite one.
It was really good.
And I think that it tells a very true story of something that people absolutely do face. But at the same time, you know, it's difficult to talk about, right? Because if you look at something like this and say, I support your ideas, I support your stories, but I take issue with, like, here, here, and here, I think it's really easy, especially since this podcast goes on the internet, for someone to come back and be like, you're a bigot. You're not a feminist. You don't believe in this. You hate black women. And it's like, no, dude. Like, just because you take issue with some parts of a rhetoric or with some parts of someone's storytelling, like, doesn't mean that. But that's, like, the thing. It's, like, scary to talk about almost because, like, it's such a polarized thing. We've reached a very radicalized state of social justice in Western culture. Which has its ups and downs, obviously. But yeah,
and I think what you're talking about is the biggest flaw of this book, if I want to call it that, is that this book pulls no punches and doesn't warm you up to some of what it does. It doesn't slow roll you into very much. It throws you right onto Bitch Planet right away and shows you all of the fucked up shit. And throws you right into the misogyny of this world. Which is good for shock value, but not good for approachability. I like this comic, and I would love to recommend this to people, but there's an extremity to this that makes it unapproachable for a lot of people. And one of my barometers is, would I give this to my wife? My wife loves good stories. She loves superhero movies. She's the reason that we got a babysitter to go watch Guardians of the Galaxy. I was going to be fine watching it on Netflix, but she was like, no, fuck it, we're going and watching that shit. So she has no barrier to comic book characters or the comic book world, but the time it takes to read and the medium itself poses a little bit of a barrier. And this, I think, because it throws you in so hard, so fast, that it can be off-putting. And I think it does, it puts people off with ideas the same way that the Daredevil Netflix show puts me off with violence. And this comic sometimes goes too far, too fast, too hard when it doesn't need to in order to get the same point across. And I get that that's also part of the exploitation genre, and that's definitely part of the shock value that Kelly Sue DeConnick is going for here. But the sci-fi encapsulation that's done here, because it's not as thick as, say, a book like Odyssey, like you brought up, that encapsulation is so much thicker. You can do so many more dynamic things, and it's a nice slow roll. This is a much more thin veneer. So when you do those heavy-handed things, it shows a lot brighter than it does in something like that, which has its merits, but also has danger to it. Do we want to talk about the art before we rate this? We've been going on for a while.
I actually have two more things. What is the art? I had one more thing before art.
Let's do it.
The homosocial female relationships in this, women supporting women. I actually thought this was like a really, 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 really well done aspect of the comic. In terms of, we see the various ways that like these women act with each other within this whole like systemized oppression, right? Like, this is literally systemized oppression. Mm-hmm. It is in the law. It is in the system. And like, Andy, as you said, it's no, it's absolutely like no coincidence that the guard from Georgia is like a blonde woman, but I don't even think it's her race that is like the main factor here. It's her gender. It's the fact that she is a woman guard on bitch planet who is acting as a kind of liaison or arm of the system. And that we see this, like, you know, they put her up here. She's the only one who doesn't wear the weird, creepy plastic masks too. They want people to see her face. They want people to see her and that she's a woman. And she is, she's kind of the epitome of traitorous backstabbing bitch. Right. She's like, oh, we'll negotiate with you. You can form a team. Sure. And then she gets people literally killed. And thinks nothing of it. So I think that's kind of one relationship of women and women here. The kind that you often see, a spouse. And this is actually a thing that I feel iffy or just icky on, actually, because you see a lot of people when women act shitty toward other women, saying that's the patriarchy. And you see that, I think most on point in the ads. Like, the ads are so good. Like, women making these ads, like, your vagina is disgusting. Like, yeah, that is absolutely patriarchal ideas of women telling other women dumb shit. But, here, like, the guard is a person who makes decisions. She's not being coerced into this, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. And then on the other half of it, like, we see two women in Penny's life. One who is genuinely trying to help her grandma. You know, they have like a very real relationship, a very good, like, maternal, familial bond there. But then Penny gets sent away, and the headmistress is, like, that woman probably genuinely thinks she's trying to quote-unquote help Penny. Like,
yeah.
You know, what are we going to do with your hair? What are we going to do about you? And she thinks she's trying to help, and she's actually kind of a more interesting character because she's someone who is legit treating another lady like shit, and she doesn't even know it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, I just... Like, even outside of the megaton team dynamics, I feel like we talked a little earlier in the podcast about how the men interact with each other, but I think the real meat and bones of this is how do these women interact with each other? And I think that the comic actually did a really good job of showing various ways in which women either kind of like reinforce or undermine the values that the society has set for them in really good or bad ways. So I think that was a high point of this comic.
And I think to tie this into the art too, the way that this comic brings that into satire, the way it makes it a character, makes it funny, is when when they're running on the treadmills next to each other and Penelope just has to stop and can't keep up, and she goes up to the end of the treadmill and a guard comes over to like force her, and she starts fighting the guard, so then more guards come over, and Violet is telling Kamau, you should do it, and explains it, and then she's done making her point, and Violet just stops running and goes to the back where Penelope's fighting, and then you see her dive bomb the dog pile of guards that are on Penelope. And it's just, there's no hesitation and not even so much as an inkling of a word that that is what Violet is going to do. That's all conveyed only through art and action and movement. And it's the completely, she doesn't even have to say, I'm going to go help my fellow woman out. It's just implied. It's without even thinking, Violet looks back, see that's happening, and goes for it. Like, so the message that you're pointing out in the actual text of the comic is ingrained in the art on multiple levels too, and I really like it. I think that's where this comic shines. I mean, the feel of it and the color palette and everything is done really, really well to evoke that exploitation, crappy 70 movies vibe. But for me, the meat and potatoes of this art is the background details.
Yeah, and I think it's just that scene is genuinely my favorite. Like how they just kind of start a prison riot for funsies in the back. But the whole time there's like the 1980s jazzercise aerobic woman on the screen too.
Yes.
And I was like, that, yes, that is a thing.
There's an ad in Penelope's store, or I think it's the beginning of the feed, and it's an ad for yogurt, and it said, yogurt, good yogurt for your bowels. Which is just a good comedy of all the shit that, like, advertising does.
Well, I mean, like, that one was really good, too, because it's, like, literally yogurt is marketed to women to make you poop good, but they can't say that women poop, so they gotta, like, I don't know, to make you feel fresh. It's like, what
they talk about being regular.
Yes.
Regular, yes. One art thing, the one art thing I really wanted to mention, which I thought was amazing, is, you know how, like, some of this is colored, where the color's offset to mimic, like, old-timey comic printing?
Yeah. Like Penelope's scene, flashback.
Yes, the scene in the muffin shop with the flashback, there's a few pages where everyone's pupils and, like, the whites of their eyes are just offset from the line art, and it is so off-putting, and that has to be a purposeful choice because it's done digitally, I assume. I don't think that they like printed it badly and then scanned it. So whoever did that, like, made a really creepy effect when the guy or the women are talking about, like, did I tell you I evac'd 12 ounces 2 days in a row? And they're like comparing poop weights, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, dude,
that is totally what they're doing.
My toilet scale doesn't, like, doesn't lie.
And it's, like, that's the scene where the color shift is just off from the line art. And I think it's actually meant to evoke this weird, like, otherworldly dystopian vibe, and it works so well. It was just this weird, weird thing that I thought ended up really working to what was going on in the text. In the comic.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's read this fuck. It's getting late.
Oh, there's that part where they talk about the parasite diet.
Yes. Yeah. Don't you wish your
parasite today.
Yeah, it was like, aren't you always jealous of all those other people getting parasitic worms? Well, now you can too. It's like, oh God. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, yeah, let's rate this. We're going long. David, I haven't heard a lot from you, so you go first. Not to, like, call on the quiet kid in class, but, you know, I want to hear your opinion.
Damn it, Mr. Weigland. what's my opinion? Okay, I enjoyed this comic. I think it's really well made and well put together, so I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Sick.
I really enjoyed it, but the problem is I don't feel like I'm really qualified to talk about it in a... I mean, I think it's bad for me to say that because I feel like this is something that like feminism and equality are something that's very important. As a society, we need to strive for that and continue to work for it. And so I feel like I should be more informed. And I want to be more informed now. But like I said, I enjoyed this as a comic. I think it's well put together and it's an entertaining read. So I think it deserves a high score. So I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4 for pretty much the same reason. I mean, I really like this. I really like a lot of what's in here. But I know there's a lot of context that I'm not getting, and I feel like I would need a gender scholar to tell me about it. And even then, I wouldn't approach it in a way that I feel like this comic deserves. And I don't know if that's reason to vote it down. But I mentioned before the approachability of this comic, and there's something about it that feels unapproachable for me, too. And I consider myself mildly woke. I try to be. And the nice thing is you can enjoy this comic on just the level of it being an entertaining sci-fi, whatever the hell, and the idea of the context of what it is. And I will say, this is more approachable. I watched the trailer for the Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, and I have no desire to watch that at all. that is not satire enough for me to want to come anywhere near that. This at least puts some sci-fi on it, makes it another planet, gives a little bit more of a spit shine, does some cool things with art. This makes it more approachable for me by doing those things. But there are, like Jen, like you pointed out, there's times when it just feels overly heavy-handed in a way that is not aggressive per se, but definitely unapproachable. I don't know if that's probably just a bullshit escape word that I've been using too much.
Dude, I'm gonna go with that.
So. Okay. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a 4. I really, really did like this, but there's some stuff that just, I feel like this comic actively pushes me away every once in a while.
Okay. I guess, is it my turn?
Yeah. Well, give me Makoto an issue and a half earlier, and it's a 5. Like, my buy-in happens with Penelope, and then I'm not sold until Makoto shows up, and that happens late.
I feel you on that.
Okay, now I'm done.
Okay. 3.5. And I actually... Writing this comic was a process in my brain. What happened here is usually I build up, I'm like, or I just like go with the feel of something, right? And I think that this comic, like as a comic, as a piece of entertainment, has really good merit, and I would have given it a 4.5. But when I say merit, I mean like the story was good, the characters were interesting, the art was good, like it was engaging on that level. I actually feel like the thing that made me knock off like a whole star rating there was the discussion guide at the end. And that is weird. I understand. It's not part of the comic. But the thing is, like, those questions were very pointed. And I understand that, this should be looked at. Like, it is saying a lot of things about intersectionality. It's saying a lot of things about race and gender and, like, what it is to be the female sex in the patriarchy. And saying a lot of, like, on-point, interesting, good things about that that people need to think about. But at the same time, I feel like that really limits its accessibility. I don't know how I feel about picking up a comic book, which is something that I do for my entertainment, and sometimes my erudition, but mostly my entertainment, and then try to discuss it and then have us say, like, I need a gender scholar. And yeah, like that's kind of the thing for me, that it makes me feel uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. And I don't know if this is a fault of the comic or just as like kind of a social cultural thing going on right now. There is a cultural paradigm of social justice and intersectional feminists, especially in like, I personally live in a fairly hyper liberalized world and I'm good with that. But, I feel like it's this prevailing thing and that it makes it less like something I want to sit down and read and more like something where it feels almost threatening to talk about because we start talking about who's qualified to talk about this, who can and can't, and that feels very limiting. So there's just like that something about that discussion guide at the end that turned the tone from being kind of like this rip riot exploitation B-movie bitch planet into being like who is qualified to talk about serious issues. And that to me doesn't make the comic any worse, but it makes it less accessible as a form of entertainment or edutainment in this case.
Yeah, no, I think you're talking about it, and I'm gonna talk over you here now because I'm a man and you're a woman.
You're gonna mansplain me?
Yeah, and therefore my ideas are more relevant.
Do it.
I'm hearing what you're saying, and the way I'm approaching it too is like, the best satire and the reason you put things in sci-fi is so that when you read them, you get the message without knowing that you've gotten the message.
Thank you. You summarized my long-ass rant in, like, a very concise way.
Because I was thinking, like, if Kelly Sue DeConnick actually listens to this episode, she will be yelling at us right now over her earbuds. Yeah, I'm afraid. Because now I have gone to her. She's done talks in the air before, and I've gone to her, and I listen at the gospel of Kelly Sue DeConnick, and I am intimidated and in awe of her level of feminism, and I love it, and I'm a big fan of her as a person. So I can hear her screaming at us in my head, and so I need to come up with a reason for why I'm agreeing with you, and it's that good satire doesn't have those lists of questions to make you look at it that way. Good satire makes you change your worldview without realizing that you've done so. And this just, by putting the questions in the back, it just puts it way too much in the forefront of, look what I did here, guys! And it's that little bit of context that's not needed, because this is good satire. It doesn't need that, but by putting it in, it kind of degrades what she's done in a way. Did I mansplain that okay?
Fucking mic drop. That was exactly. This is my gripe. Like, it's so hard to talk about these things because it's so scary that you might like genuinely offend or hurt someone by discussing these issues, and I hate that aspect of it.
And I'm not out here. I can hear her yelling that these questions are in the back because you need to talk about them. Like, that's why they're there, is to make you talk about them. Like, what you're saying, like, it's scary, but talk about them because they're important. Sorry.
Yeah, but, like, you can't just, like, force it on people, right? Like, it's not the comic's fault. We live in, like, a crazy time environment when people will, like, send you death threats on the internet for talking about feminism wrong. That's, like, not this comic's fault, but it appears in this context, and it makes it... I want comics like this to be accessible to everyone. I never want to hand someone like a hyper-feminist comic and then have them be like, I don't know if I'm qualified to talk about this. Of course you are. Feminism is for everybody. Right? Like, that's my... So, yeah, discussion guide is not the comic. I get it, but I don't know.
Okay.
Feminism is for everyone. That is the end of my rant there.
Okay. I don't want to talk over you again.
No, I know. I've taken up like 20 minutes of this podcast with crazy person ranting, and I apologize for this episode.
Cool. That's the end of our Turns Out It Was Good series. Next episode, we are going to start a whole new arc on Wonder Woman 75. So last year, 2016, was the 75th anniversary of Wonder Woman's first appearance. And DC decided to do the anniversary justice by putting out a bunch of really good content. I have looked at doing a Best of Wonder Woman before, and there are good Wonder Woman stories, but it's a little bit of the Luke Cage problem, where there's not a lot of good Wonder Woman leads. There's a couple. Gail Simone being a standout, but for the most part, she's seems to have gotten the most attention as a teammate or as a supporting role of some kind. But last year, that was completely overdone. There were four fantastic titles that were all really well reviewed, so we're going to read them. And actually, there were more than four, but these were the ones that keep coming up. So next week, we're going to read Wonder Woman, The True Amazon by Jill Thompson. After that, we're going to read The Legend of Wonder Woman by Renee DeLiz, and then Wonder Woman Earth One by Grant Morrison. And then we're going to wrap up with Wonder Woman The Lies by Greg Rucka. I'm really excited for the Greg Rucka one. He is really known for writing female characters incredibly well. And writing good comics aside from that too. So I'm psyched for Greg Rucka, and I'm really excited for the next couple weeks. And the only one I'm not excited about is the Grant Morrison one, the Earth one. Not just because Grant nemesis. Morrison. Yeah, not just because of that though, but also because Earth one. Earth one, for those of you who might not have context, was DC's attempt at doing an Ultimates universe, but instead of being like the ultimate version of the characters, it was like the hoodie emo versions of the character. Like this was hoodie Superman was Superman Earth One. So we'll see. It's well received. Who knows? I'll give you another shot, Grant. We'll see what happens. That's what's coming up next week. Wonder Woman through Amazon. If you want to find out what we have coming up after that or listen to one of our previous episodes, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, we have an archive page, we have a future show page, we have a contact page. From there, you can also get to our Patreon where you can support the show. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And if you subscribe as at least a penny patron, that's just a penny a month. You get access to bonus content between every series. So after this episode, there's not going to be an episode next week, but the following week will be the Wonder Woman one. And in that blank week, if you were a patron, you get access to the bonus episode in which you get to hear us talk about stuff before and after the show. And there's other perks there too. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Just go take a look. Going to the page doesn't necessitate you giving any money or signing up for anything. You can just go and look. You don't even need an account. You can go and look. Go check it out, see what's there. And if you decide to support the show, a penny. A penny is all it takes. Welcome to patreon.com/welcometocomics. I think I pimped that enough. That's like the fourth time I've said that. The URL. But yeah, next week, Wonder Woman, True Amazon by Jill Thompson. Until then, everybody.